and a lot has happened in 10 years. But do you know what? This season feels like things are coming back. David Moyes is back at Everton. The RK Football Podcast is back. Who asked for this, by the way?
I'll hold my hands up.
Well, we are back. I'm Carl Dixon, joined by Matt Thaney, and David Newman as well. So, I don't really know where to start this. It's been 10 years, guys.
I've lost all my hair and it's transferred from here to there.
We weren't on video before, by the way. So, I promise you, he did have hair 10 years ago. It was on its way, but he did have hair.
We have proof. It's fine. We have proof.
Exactly. You know.
So we start the FA Cup then. We're recording this literally, I don't know, sort of half an hour after this Manchester United Arsenal game's finished. Dave's very happy. Very, very happy, I should probably say.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Yeah, great game. I mean, that second half was just mental. Really, things got kicked off as soon as Dalot got sent off for that second yellow card, which was completely unnecessary. But then I think a few minutes later on, Gabriel got the equaliser, and then all hell just broke loose after that. Great win, though. In particular, the two players I want to shout out are the keeper, Boyender, who had a great game, saving the penalty, obviously. Pardon?
Did you sign him at the start of this season, the keeper?
I think so, yeah. Do you know, I'm not too certain. Obviously, he's a Turkish fella. I don't know if we signed him at the beginning, but I believe so. I hadn't heard of him before, to be perfectly honest. I think that's the first time I've seen him play. But he had an absolutely blinding game. Obviously, saving the penalty in the match against, was it Odegaard who took it? And then a couple of really important stops. And the other player I want to shout out is De Ligt, who had just a stellar performance. A couple of goal-saving blocks. Really, really good at the back today. He was really great. Just continuing on as well from that point, well-earned point that they got at Liverpool, I think, last weekend. Just two magnificent performances. And at the very end, very happy to see Xerxes get the winning penalty for United as well. He's had a lot of stick in the last couple of weeks, particularly from the fans. But I think getting that winner, he really, really deserved it, I think. But a great game overall, great game for the neutral. But obviously, as a United fan, I was particularly pleased by the whole thing.
I think that it's interesting because Almiron. When he first came in, it was such it was going to take time to obviously get things going. But it does look like in the last two games, it's starting to come into fruition a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in one of his first press conferences, he said, he was quite blunt and quite frank about the fact. He said things are not going to be very pleasant. There's going to be a lot of disappointing results on the way. There's going to be it's going to be difficult, basically. And then when we started to suffer a couple of losses, fans were really starting to get on his back. But he had kind of said this from the off, is that this is not going to be easy, so just stick with me. But I think now, yeah, particularly with that game against Liverpool the other week, and the win against City, of course, there's been a couple of performances now from the team. I think they're now starting to begin to sort of get used to the structure that he wants with that kind of three at the back and the wing backs. It's starting to look pretty good at the moment. And I think it's Southampton next in the league next weekend, or I think Tuesday. So just another chance to kind of go that one step up and sort of build on that momentum that they've had in the last couple of games.
Big six-pointer that on Tuesday, really, for the fight to the bottom.
I thought it was extraordinary that, when I forget who they lost against, when in the post-match press conference, Almiron was asked about kind of the question of relegation came up. And it's just so bizarre to see a Man United manager talk about the possibility of relegation. It was just so strange. It just felt like a new low for the club in 10 or 11 years of sort of fairly consistent, ups and downs, but a lot of lows. That felt like a new one. But,
To be fair, and we'll talk about West Ham in a little bit, but a lot of people had West Ham in that same mix, right, when Lopetegui was sacked. West Ham are in the exact same points as Man United. So Ham are in a relegation battle, in theory, Man United are in a relegation battle by that logic.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, they were in relegation form. There's no doubt about that. But the thought of United actually getting relegated, it was just never going to happen.
Casemiro get relegated. What a story.
That'd be funny.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, to be fair, I will say, if we go in that far, you kind of have to throw Spurs in the mix. They're only a point ahead. So, I mean, I don't know how crazy we get with it at that point. So.
Go way up to Nottingham Forest. Let's go crazy. No, they're not going down, that is for sure.
They are mathematically safe. I'm just looking at the league table. They are mathematically
safe. They're 12th at the moment, 24, they're 8 points above the relegation.
They're in a tight race of us.
They are the in-form team in the league, by the way. And not changed in 10 years.
Do you think that as well, like Arsenal... I mean, I didn't watch the game earlier, unfortunately, but do you think Arsenal now are, how would I describe it? They've completely lost momentum. They have. They're very inconsistent now. The defence isn't as solid as it once was, that's for sure. And I think Saka, as much as I thought he wasn't as important to the team as Odegaard, I actually think he is just as important. Like, and it's showing in these games now.
Yeah, one positive for Arsenal, though, I think, was Sterling when he came on. He was Arsenal's best player when he came on. He was showing a lot of promise in that right-hand position where Saka normally would be. He was on fire in that match, really. He was probably Arsenal's biggest threat going forward. But again, Kai Havertz had a couple of glaring chances, which he missed. And I just put, again, the question about Arsenal needing a striker, which is obviously clearly evident. But again and again, Havertz is just showing that he just is not up to the... He just can't be Arsenal's number nine if they want to win anything significant. They certainly need someone else who has got more coldness in front of gold. In front of goal.
And
gold, too. But yeah, he's just not the man that Arsenal need.
It's been a really bad week for Arsenal, it should be said, to be fair. Yeah. I mean, I actually think this penalty shootout loss will be more important than you think in a few months' time, because how long can Arsenal under Arteta really go without winning a trophy? Because they're not going to win the Premier League this year, it feels like. They're still in with it, and I'm not saying Liverpool can't throw it away. We've seen it before. But it seems unlikely, right?
But the Community Shield is a trophy. Can we?
No. I can't see Newcastle losing the second leg that badly that Arsenal are going to go through in the League Cup. So this FA Cup is actually really important for Arteta this year, I think. And a home tie against a Man United team that are not quite the superpower they used to be, and that's being generous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a missed opportunity for me. I do think Arteta will start getting some pressure soon, because this year in particular, with City off the boil, if Arsenal don't win the league, which it doesn't look like they will, this was their year.
Yeah. I think it's, if someone had told Arteta at the beginning of the season that City are going to be as bad as they are, they would have been dancing, because they'd be thinking, right, well, then no one else is going to be challenging us. Surely Liverpool, with their new manager, they're going to be in a transition period. There's no one else who can possibly challenge us. So, but for Liverpool to be doing as well as they are, no one really would have foreseen that. I mean, I'm looking at the table now. So Arsenal are 6 points behind Liverpool, who have a game in hand. And I believe that game in hand is against Everton, who recently reappointed Moyes at Goodison. Well, we'll come on to Moyes in a bit. But I mean, it's not completely unfeasible that Liverpool could drop a couple more points. I mean, they've drawn three of their last six league games, so they have been dropping points here and there. So the league isn't totally unfeasible for Arsenal to possibly come back and win it. I don't know how they've been in Europe. They've kind of been there, but I'm not too sure where they are in the Champions League.
They're in the top
table at the moment. They're in the top eight. Are they in the top eight, or are they third?
They're in the qualifier.
Yeah. So, I mean, it might come to a stage where Arteta, maybe in when the sort of the knockout stages begin, he might have to make it a choice whether or not to kind of go all in for the league, depending on how, you know, depending on where they are, or go in for the Champions League. I just go all in for that. But
I think
at the moment, it's not looking good.
Like you were saying there, like, Liverpool keep dropping points here and there, like, but they're not losing. They're not losing.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You could look at a draw, and yes, it is dropped points, but if Salah gets injured, yes, that would be a huge injury. But Gakpo,
he's having a great season. Gakpo.
There's players that are going to score the goals that will at least keep them going. Whereas I look at Arsenal, and yes, they are getting goals, but I don't think you can rely on Martinelli, Kai Havertz, to get you enough goals that are going to keep you in the title race. I just don't see.
All right, but on that question then, who do they sign? Who do they sign that's going to power them to the Premier League title? There's not many top-class, world-class goal scorers out there anymore.
Well, this me and Stuart actually talking about this the other day, and we were saying, if Arsenal sign a world-class striker this window, you're talking over 70 million, like, for sure, for that strike. And if they don't then win the league, or at least close the gap and do really well in the Champions League, you have to say to Arteta's out in the summer. So I think the safest option for him would be to bring in an experienced striker on loan.
Where are you going with this?
Do you remember when Henrik Larsson?
Right.
Signed for Man United.
I'm not sure he'd be the right sort of fit for Arsenal.
Not Henrik Larsson. Henrik Larsson.
Henrik doesn't know.
You know, yeah. But what I mean is someone like Victor Osimhen. Sign a striker who's going to score a lot of goals, potentially, and it's going to cost a lot of money to bring him in.
Right. Sorry. I'm going to have to stop you there. You've just compared a 36-year-old Henrik Larsson to a 26-year-old prime of his career, Victor Osimhen, who's sat in the Turkish leagues because he's already on loan from Napoli and he's on a stupid wage.
Yeah. But what my reasoning is because where he had that complete mess up with Napoli, and didn't they tear up his contract? Am I right in thinking they teared up his contract, didn't they?
It's complicated. Okay.
Tear up the piece of paper does not mean it's still not a legal document, unfortunately. Just to let you know.
But if he then is given the chance to come into the Premier League, it's a chance for him to show, right, in the summer, if I can score 10, 12 goals by the end of the season with Arsenal, someone is surely going to sign me and get me out of Turkey. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, but he'll go back to Napoli in the summer because he's only on loan. But yes, I mean, your point stands. Osimhen would be a brilliant signing for Arsenal, but he is that 70 million, 80 million pound striker.
Yeah, but what I mean is there a way, do you think, that they could get him on loan for the rest of this season? Or do you reckon that's...
No, because he's already on loan. That's the problem. So he would have to cancel his loan with Galatasaray, which, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not sure he'll make it out of Turkey alive if he does that. I get your point. I do get your point. I think he's a brilliant striker. I don't think he fits that Henrik Larsson role that you were thinking of. I mean, this is the problem. There's just not many... A lot of people are getting on Arsenal's back saying they need to have a top-class striker there. And I get it. But who? There's just no one out there that Arsenal are going to sign.
It's not really a thing anymore, is it? Like, it's not like back in the day when it was like, you could probably go each league and pick out like four or five world-class strikers, right? It's just not really a thing anymore. It's like, I think obviously with Liverpool, we've got Mo Salah that's obviously doing, he's falling with his life right now. But we've got a good rotation of just really good players that are just like, they can, like, I checked the statistics, like we've got, like, what was it, 14, 15 goals or something, like double figures. But the question is, like, who, and also it's January. It's not like the old January where, like, everyone, like, you know, like someone's going to spend 100, 220 million. everyone's like kind of keeping the, you know, trying not to spend as much. So, and also when you want to get someone that's got kind of Premier League kind of experience to come in, just to do your job.
The irony of it all is if Arsenal were looking for an aging striker with Premier League experience who bangs in the goals, right, and wants to play for a potential title-winning side.
I think I know what you're going to say.
No, they should have signed, don't you?
Jamie Vardy.
No!
Oh, I was going to say Jamie Vardy.
Chris Wood?
Premier League experience.
I was going to say Harry Kane would have been the signing. Obviously, it wasn't going to happen Tottenham to Arsenal. But say Harry Kane wasn't a Tottenham through and through, and he was, I don't know, I want to say West Ham, or he was at Everton.
He started at Arsenal, didn't he?
Well, I mean, yeah, depends who you speak to. But that's my point. He is the last sort of, the last breadth of this elite striker that the Premier League have seen. Haaland, obviously. Take Haaland out of it. He lives on his own world, so.
It's funny that all the best strikers in the Premier League, you could arguably say none of them are really at any of the top six clubs. Because you've got, in right now, I mean, because you've got Isak at Newcastle United. You've got Chris Wood at Nottingham. You know, Ollie Watkins at Aston Villa. Mbeumo a striker at Brentford? None of the top clubs seem to have that world class number nine.
I guess you're glad he stayed then.
Are we missing anyone, guys? Oh! See, look, Captain Chaos is at it again. He's thrown the last one. On point. Let's get back on point. We're literally bringing the house down.
What about the Spurs game then? Tamworth taking them to extra time.
And, you know, that was... I've got a feeling about that, because it's like they played so well to get them to extra time, and then because there's no replays anymore, it's like a situation of like now you've got to like play an extra two halves of extra time to kind of hold out Tottenham at bay, and it's just really, it's just, when I saw that,
as we're all Premier League supporting teams, obviously, how do we feel about the fact that there's no longer replays?
I like it, but I think that extra time needs to go. I think if you draw at the end of 90 minutes, just go straight to penalties. I really don't see the point of having another half an hour when players are usually tired anyway. And by the second half, the second 15 minutes, the players are normally playing for penalties anyway, and there's usually no excitement at all. Obviously, with a few exceptions, but I really don't see the point at all of having that extra 30 minutes. Just go straight to penalties.
What about, because of what game was it? I think it was one in the Euros, when a couple of games went to extra time. And the thing is, most of the time, what you notice is they play 90 minutes and the quality of football is normally quite good, as expected. But it gets to extra time. It doesn't matter about the quality of the player. All of a sudden, the quality does just drop.
Yeah.
And it's like you're going to get a scrappy goal or be caught on the counter to win the game. Or like you say, if they're both playing for penalties because they're scared of conceding the goal, like you say.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the third round of the FA Cup, you know, there's no need to kind of just get to the penalties, get it over with and move on. There's no, I really don't see the point of having that another 30 minutes that the players have to play.
I agree with your point about extra time. I couldn't disagree more about replays. The fact that we don't get replays anymore is genuinely a travesty. When you think about the fact that Tamworth, so what would have happened? We're talking business now, right? What would have happened? Tamworth 0-0, fantastic result, amazing, got a draw at home to Tottenham, brilliant. Then they'll arrange a replay at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium where Tamworth will get 50% of all earnings.
Yeah.
That will fund that club for 10 years.
Yeah, I agree.
And now that no longer happens because, and I understand the point of player welfare, we play too much games, etc., etc., completely stands up until you see that Tottenham have arranged a post-season friendly in Australia against Newcastle 3 days after their final league game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know. It doesn't hold up when you look at it like that. So I just, I agree with extra time, by the way. Extra time is a waste of time, and it just, it's going to cause injuries, etc., etc. I agree. Yeah. But the fact that you can't do replays, but we play the amount of international fixtures we've got, the amount of friendlies that happen, and even further than that. So, I mean, you look at the club schedules. So, say one of the Premier League teams that got knocked out over the weekend, if there was any, right? When fourth round comes and they won't have a game, they will arrange a behind closed doors game with another team that's not playing to make sure all the players are sharp and ready to go for the league game next year, next week. So isn't that too many games?
Yeah, but that game obviously won't be played at nearly the intensity that an actual FA Cup game or league game would be played. I know what you mean, that it is technically another game, but it is just one of those, just keep the sharpness, keep the fitness kind of things. You know, I don't think it's quite the same. I mean, it's one of those where, you know, with the replays, I mean, the top clubs, so, you know, Premier League teams and maybe Championship teams who are chasing promotion would argue are happy that there are no more replays. And then the lower league teams are kind of happy or not as happy. So, you know, it's difficult. But as a fan, obviously, I mean, as a fan of a lower league club, you would be disappointed, for example, Tranmere getting the 0-0, not getting to the, you know, getting to go to Tottenham's ground and having the club having a massive influx of money because of that. But I mean, you know, fans, the top sides are would say exactly the opposite. They don't really care about that, obviously, because they have the money. They're happy just to do the one fixture and move on, you know. So it's,
I've seen a lot of people on social media sort of argue about this today, and someone said to a Tamworth fan, why would you want a replay to go up to London and watch your team lose 9-0 at a Premier League stadium? Nobody wants that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they absolutely do. They don't care what that result is. If I support Tamworth, I don't give a damn what that result is, because the only time you're going to a stadium that's got more than one toilet is yeah. Do you know what I mean? So.
Do you know what? Well, you've mentioned that as well. I remember a game earlier in the season, Chelsea in the Conference League. Obviously, the teams we're playing in that tournament we are so much better than them. But there was one team that came to Stamford Bridge in Noah. They came to that game. I think the score was 8-0 in the end. But throughout that entire game, you looked at the Noah fans and they were loving every second of it. And that's exactly like you say there. Why would you be celebrating like that if you're losing 8-0? Because it's the occasion. That's probably the only time in their history they may play a team like Chelsea.
It's a really difficult conversation, because if you're talking about sporting integrity and competition, then there was no reason to get rid of replays. But you are talking financial, and that's what it is. It's not
absolutely. Yeah.
It's a financial blow for the lower league teams and the non-league teams, and it's a financial boost to the Premier League and the Championship teams. And that's the fact of the matter. And it sucks. It does. As a Premier League supporter, it sucks. But it is what it is. We're not going to change it. Moving on to other sort of notes of the FA Cup, because we've already waffled on too much, by the way. We're back, boys. We're back. right, so Spurs 3, United 3, Plymouth beating Brentford deserves a special shout out. Yeah. Amazing from them. They're now going to host Liverpool in the fourth round. So, you know, point them turning up, really. They're going to just lose. So, may as well scrap that too. Villa 3 on Friday night, by the way. Yes, of course we are. Beat West Ham. I hate playing West Ham. I honestly hate playing West Ham. Do you know, there's just some teams that you play and you like, you can be in the form of your life and you go, we're going to lose that game. I hate when Packers have put them 1-0 up. I was like, here we go again. It's just awful. Anybody else we want to mention? I mean, we should mention West Ham then, right? We should quickly move that over into the land of Graham Potter.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic appointment. I really do.
Yeah,
he was a fantastic manager at Brighton. I think that when he took the Chelsea job, I'll be one of the people that I would say I was wishing him all luck in the world, but it was a big job to take on.
it didn't work out, and now he's been given this chance at West Ham. I think he'll thrive. I really do. I think this is a perfect appointment for West Ham. Andy.
Do you think Potter in particular, so I've thought this with Potter myself, clearly a really talented manager. Do you think Chelsea just wasn't the right time for that job? Because the way I looked at it with Potter, I don't know who you'd have put in that role that would have succeeded with that team and that issues that that team had.
Yeah, that was just when Bowley came in, wasn't it? So there was a lot of turbulence going on with the club at that time and kind of the massive influx of players that were coming in. So yeah, arguably you could say that any manager that came in would have had similar issues. But also I do think that it was a massive jump to go from Brighton to Chelsea. And I just think he might not have been prepared at that point in his career to kind of take on that kind of job.
I do agree, actually, in a way with what Carl you're saying there, because when you look at what Maresca's done so far, yes, things have gone a bit downhill recently. But before that point, it looked like all of the restructuring of the club with the team was finally coming together. And was it Maresca doing everything right, or was it finally those players were getting used to being together? I think Maresca have done really well. But if Potter was there, could he have done the same thing?
Yeah, this is my point. I want to give Maresca credit. Don't be wrong. He's been stern with his players, which is good. And I think the owners have given him a little more leeway to put his power across, which is good. But you're right. I think if you put Potter in there, I even think if they'd have stuck with Pochettino and given him the leeway that Maresca's got, I still think he'd have done a similar job because the players are there with Chelsea. We're getting off topic. We're talking about Chelsea. West Ham, Potter. No, to be fair, I actually do agree with Matt. It's a very good signing. Very good appointment, even.
Kudus will thrive under Graham Potter as well, because is it Matoma? Wasn't he there when Graham Potter was manager?
Yeah.
And he shone. And I think Kudus has that same sort of capabilities as well as he does. And I think he'll just launch now.
Somerville as well, I think, had a good game against us on Friday night. It'd be nice to see him get a good run against West Ham, considering he was signed and then not really played for Lopetegui. I actually do think Lopetegui is a good manager, but he's failed at Wolves, he's failed at West Ham. You do wonder if the Premier League is just a little bit too unforgiving.
Well, we failed at Madrid as well. Failed at Real Madrid.
I don't know if the Madrid job was ever going to... Yeah. But yeah. But West Ham, good appointment. Let's speak about Everton. Stu, I'm going to come to you because I know how much you love Everton.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
David Moyes.
There's an Everton poster on the other side of his camera.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say, guys. I spot both sides.
Genuinely, Dave, if you'd have said at the start of the season, David Moyes is going to return to Everton, I don't think anybody would have put a bet on that. And it's such an incredible appointment, really.
It's a crazy one. I got to be honest. I mean, there was what was it? I think to be fair, the way they sacked him, Sean Dyche, think it's not got to put. But you got to put that across as well. They kind of sacked him just what a couple well, an hours before the FA Cup game against the FA Cup game. Like, I get it. If you want to get rid of the guy, get rid of him. But don't get rid of him before a game. Like maybe after the game or.
I don't actually think Dyche deserved the sacking, for the record. If you look at Everton's form, they've lost one of the last five.
But it was all draws, it's right?
Two, isn't
three
it?
Draws, two. Three draws and a win. And I mean, I know it's Everton, and I think these owners have got really high expectations to move into a new stadium with, and I get that. I do think this appointment, it just feels like they're going, we need to get the fans on side. Who is the most successful manager of the last, I don't know, 30 years in Everton's history?
Yeah, besides Martinez. That's probably going to be the ultimate new manager, Pence.
I would put Moyes above Martinez, personally. I know Martinez had a good couple of years, but Moyes took him to the Champions League.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's going to be like the ultimate new manager bounce, I think.
I think the other thing as well is...
But hang on. Ultimate new manager, can we not? We don't want to see Everton have a new manager bounce, not on Tuesday. Maybe the week after, that's fine.
I agree. I would love to see them get relegated. It would be really funny, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Especially a new stadium as well. It would be amazing.
You say there about Sean Dyche didn't deserve the sacking. I do agree with you, Carl, with what you say there. I do think it was harsh. However, I think that... Could you honestly see Sean Dyche getting that Everton side out of a relegation fighting club into a team that's going to be in the top half?
No, and this is where I kind of agree with the appointment of Moyes, because he has done it before for Everton, taking them from relegation fodder to the Champions League. So I kind of get it, but the situation of it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's not like Moyes has, you know, just come out of a job, or he's, do you know what I mean? He's been out of West Ham's job for a long time, so that they could have brought him in at any point of the season so far. They could have brought him in the summer. They could have brought him in one of the international breaks. But as Stu said, they wait 2 hours before they kick off in the FA Cup. And went, by the way, Sean, now, are you here? Oh, yeah, you can go again. Don't worry, we don't need you. Mm.
It's a bit. And he picked the team.
He done all the work. Everything. He's basically done all the work, set up the team, put again team talk, and then just about to go out, like, you know, already, and then just, oh, sorry, guys. Sacked. See you later. Bye.
Do you guys want to hear an interesting stat that's going to fit in with this podcast? When you think back on it now, who were Everton's fullbacks when we started this podcast 10 years ago?
Was that? Oh, that must have been Leighton Baines and...
Seamus Coleman. Would have been
Seamus Coleman, yeah.
And who took the team as joint managers on Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Both of
them. Yeah, I'm Baines is the under-18s that. Manager, is he? The under-21s?
Yeah. While we're on the subject of Everton... I feel like I want to bring this up because I want to kind of see what other people feel and possibly rant. Ashley Young and his son.
Yes.
I mean, it's a brilliant story, the idea that Ashley Young would have played against his son. As someone who's a big Ashley Young supporter, he's had a huge impact on my footballing life. Yeah. Even. Obviously, the son didn't make it onto the pitch for Peterborough, and there was a lot of backlash to Darren Ferguson for that, including a couple of Everton players in the tunnel, apparently. How do we feel?
I think that when Ferguson, the Peterborough manager, when he came out afterwards and he said, I needed to win the game, so I brought on an attacker and all this sort of stuff, and he was defending his decision... In the nicest way, too right. As nice as it would have been to see him play against each other, he's in there to do a job for Peterborough, not to feel nostalgia and not to make history with a little substitution. He's there to win a game and to do well for that team.
Yeah.
That's what
results should always take precedent over nostalgia, shouldn't it?
100%.
Yeah, I mean, they've only won their down, wouldn't they? I think they've won their down at that point. So, like, obviously, in the press conference, he said, if I was 2-0 down, I'd be like, okay, maybe put him on because the game's over. But he's still got a chance. So, yeah, go for it. And I mean, was it Ashley Young's son? Where does he play? I'm just curious. He's not a forward.
He's a right back.
So, I mean, if it was like the game's gone, okay, give him his moment. But
further than that as well, though, he is a right back that has played 27 minutes of football this season for Peterborough in a EFL trophy match. He's not part of this first team for Peterborough anyway. So it would have been so forced. It's genuinely like Chelsea going, right, we've got to play him in our under-18s that's got a connection with someone on the opposite end of the field, so we're going to play him in an FA Cup match. It's just not right. And there have been some people, honestly, there's a certain social media platform that has gone to the dogs in the last few years. And I don't know why I'm still on it, if I'm really honest. I don't know why I do to myself. But I've seen some of the replies on there, and some are saying, I can't believe Darren Ferguson took this moment from him, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you guys are the same people that will sit there and go, oh my God, 6,000 people for Sheffield United in the FA Cup. This is why it should be 3 p.m. on a Saturday. Talk about the prestige of the tournament and respecting the competition. And those two sentiments don't go in the same sentence, do they? Because you cannot say respect the competition. Oh, also, can you bring on Tyler Young for a sentimental value?
Yeah. I think even if Peterborough were losing 20-0, even if he brought him on then, I still would have been like, oh, come on, mate. You know, it's just...
Yeah. No, I do agree. I think it would have been nice to see, but in terms of credibility, it would have been a bit like... especially at the point in the game it was, it wouldn't have
There was no tactical reason to put him on, basically. Like, so...
Exactly, yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah.
Just before we move on from the FA Cup, should we just have a little look through this draw, shall we? Because obviously the fourth round draw's coming, and if Matthew's put his editing brain into gear, this will be out well before the fourth round day, hopefully. So, where have I got? Right. So yeah, Plymouth hosting Liverpool is the headline, but I don't know if that's really the most interesting tie in there. Exeter hosting Nottingham Forest. It sounds a hell of a lot of fun. Coventry hosting Ipswich, Frank Lampard's Coventry City, as they're well known now. Who else we got in there? Man United hosting Leicester, Chelsea away at Brighton.
Yep.
Blackburn hosting Wolves, Birmingham hosting Newcastle, Everton and Bournemouth, Villa Spurs. Oh, I'm annoyed. I'm actually annoyed by that one.
Spurs will lose that. I think Spurs will lose that.
I hope so.
We don't know about Tottenham. One minute they're rubbish, another day they can be great. It's just you can't pick what kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Tottenham's best performance of the season. Oh yeah, against Villa. Leighton Orient or Derby County versus Man City could be fun. Southampton v Burnley is genuinely just one of those fixtures where it's, is it Premier League? Is it Championship? What year are we? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think they're actually fighting for the right to play in the Premier League next year. It's one of those playoff matches, basically. So Burnley win.
Rehearsal.
But yeah, I mean, there's no real standout fixtures. There's a couple of little potential giant killers, but they probably won't get on TV. So
the thing is, you don't like, as nice as it is to see like the game we just had, Man United versus Arsenal in the third round. You can't, that game you kind of want to be later on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like it when that game's later on. When it's the first few rounds, I'm like, really? Like, for the smaller clubs, it gives them a chance of getting through. But I prefer that at a bit later stage, I do, personally.
Yeah, so. Me too. But if it's a good game, I mean, tonight's game, or this, you know, this afternoon's game was a belter. But I agree with you that, yeah, that feels like a kind of semi-final kind of tie as opposed to the third round, isn't it?
No, I agree. But I think that for me, I was throwing it out there, I think Bournemouth could be a team that could go far in this tournament. I think they've got the squad depth there, not to do really well, but if they can get quarterfinal, semi-final, I think like that is definitely plausible for the team he's got.
There's a couple of teams in there that you look at and you go, go on, give it a really good go. I'm looking at Brighton, I know they've got Chelsea, but Brighton, go on, give it a good go, because you're just going to be mid-table. Someone like Bournemouth, I mean, I hope Villa give it a good go this year. And then Palace have got a fixture away at Doncaster. Obviously, they're kind of in a relegation battle, but you want to give them a good go there. Right, final topic we had on our agenda. Shocking news came out of Manchester last night as Pep Guardiola revealed that Kyle Walker is not involved in the drubbing of Salford City due to the fact that he would like to leave Manchester City this window, by the way, to go and play abroad. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think AC Milan was a team that was mentioned that he might, or who might potentially be interested in him.
I actually think it's a really smart call by Kyle Walker, because this season we have seen that the age is catching up with him, I think it's fair to say.
He's finally getting...
He's no longer a world-class right-back, which he was for a few years. I'm not, do you know what I mean? No one can debate that. He's no longer a world-class right-back. And I think he's looked at what Kieran Trippier has done in his career and gone, how can I stay in a top-level team and how can I stay in the England team? And he's gone, well, let's go. Let's go to an Atletico Madrid. Let's go to a Napoli. Let's go to a Dortmund, for example, where the football's not quite as intense as the Premier League. Better in some aspects, technically, or in lots of other different ways. But in terms of intensity, isn't quite as intense. I actually think it's a really smart call for him to do it himself as well, because I wonder if he's had a chat with Pep and Pep said, look, you're a great leader of this locker room, an experienced player for me. However, Rico Lewis needs to play. Mm-hmm. And you are not going to start as many games as you did last season. And we all know that if he sat on the bench for 6 months, his value drops big time. Mm.
Yeah. And he, as well as that, I mean, he's done absolutely everything at the club. So, you know, he won't be leaving sort of. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the probably the best right back in the league for the last 5-6 years. Certainly.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Certainly in the top three. Certainly up there anyway. But yeah. No, I think it's better than Robertson. But And as well as that, he still has another 2-3 years left of a good career left. He still has that blistering pace, you know. So it's not as if he's kind of, you know, he's right at the end of his career. He still has a good bit to offer, I think. So, yeah, I think going abroad with maybe 2 or 3 years left is a good shout. As well, like you said, Kyle, as well, keeping himself in contention for the England squad as well for when Tuchel takes over fully. It's not a bad shout.
Do you think it's a bold thing? Bold statement to make, but would you say that Kyle Walker is the best right back in Premier League history? Would it be fair to say that?
He's certainly in with a shout. I mean, how many he's won 5 leagues, hasn't he? Five leagues.
He's won the Champions League. He's won the FA Cup. How many times? He's won the League Cup. Won the Community Shield. Like he is.
I get your point, but he's also playing in one of the best Premier League teams that's ever been during that era, let's be fair, in terms of dominance. And okay. I mean, yes, but then you would look at this top five. Kyle Walker's in the top five. I agree, 100%. Yeah. Probably top three. Yeah.
Gary Neville.
You've got to put Gary Neville in there. As much as a lot of people will disagree, you've got to put Gary Neville in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would probably put somebody like...
would you put Robertson in there?
He's a left back, isn't he?
Oh, is he left back?
If we're talking full backs, yeah, maybe. I was actually going to say, I wonder if someone like Lauren gets in there. He had a really good couple of years for Arsenal, invincible season.
I think if he was in the Premier League for longer.
He had a good run at Portsmouth as well.
Won the FA Cup.
But yeah.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Trent, I mean, would Trent be in there?
Trent's a baffling one. I actually want to bring up one more subject before we go. I know but you brought in Trent. Let's talk Trent, right? Trent is a very good right wing back. He's a very good right midfielder. Central midfielder is okay. As a defensive fullback, he is the opposite of Gary Neville. It's the best way to say it. He's just not a defensive fullback. Stu, you've watched him for years. He is not somebody who's going to make a last-ditch saving tackle or a brilliant interception or was clear one off the goal line because he's had the IQ to get there. But he is someone that's going to make a world-class assist or a world-class pass or a world-class finish.
Free kick.
Yeah, I mean, he's a... Trent's an interesting one because obviously he's world-class when it comes to delivery and obviously some of the... Obviously that goal he scored at... I know it's only in the FA Cup, but that was pretty sweet goal he scored at the weekend. But I get it. But I think Trent's... What they're asking him to do is not like a traditional role. So it's kind of, he's got to probably make up, with Klopp, he used to have to, like, it was obviously more further up the pitch, so we had to cover more ground. And obviously when we had that season when, obviously, our midfield just fell apart, he was exposed. But I think it's just another thing of, like, with Trent, they kind of go, oh, he's defensively, he's not as good. It's like, possibly he's not, like, you know, he's a good defender. World-class, that's a debate for another day. But, like, but the quality he gives on, like, kind of like a fullback, like the quality of his balls and that, like, come on. He's definitely worth the effort, like, he's worth it. Being obviously best right back in the Premier League ever, I mean, I would love to say it, but I mean,
I think he's a traditional right back.
Certainly
one of Liverpool's a very good fullback for Real Madrid soon, so it's fine.
I mean, everyone had to chill out after that Man United performance. He's allowed to have a bad game, okay? It's like he was terrible in that game. But yeah. I've never seen people get so worked up, especially on Sky Sports, of like, oh, he's this and that. It's like, relax. You don't know what's in his head. You don't know if that's the reason he didn't play well.
But
just relax.
I will say one thing for sure. Like, I get what you're saying about the defensive output isn't as good. And I do agree with that 100%. Do you think he has come around in he's come around at the right time for this era of football we're in? If he was in the era where we had Gary Neville, someone like that, I personally don't think he would have been as good.
If this was the late 90s, he wouldn't have made it at the academy and he'd be walking.
Yes.
He'd be working at Sports Direct. So.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, he wouldn't, because when you think of the late 90s, the right back's role was to tackle, block a cross, pass to your right winger,
right wing, yeah,
and win a header. Trent's not good in the air. He can pass, yeah. He can't tackle really, and he's not good at blocking crosses either. So, I think he's a brilliant player. All round in 2025, brilliant player. He's not a 90s right back. I think that's fair.
Yeah. So I think.
Which is a bit harsh on him because we're not in the 90s anymore, you know. By saying, like, oh, he wouldn't survive in this era, it's a bit harsh on
him. Most players
wouldn't. He's thriving in this era, you know.
Most players wouldn't. So it's kind of a.
Yeah, exactly.
I get what you mean. It's football's different. But obviously, then it's just like, yeah, the right back role is just basically, yeah, you do. Stay back, put a header in when you can, put a tackle in to stop, you know, when I'm playing. But yeah, it's different. It's obviously tactics of and I'm kind of like different kind of roles and what the players are expected to do are definitely different from. It's a bit, you could say it's a bit simpler back then. We just had one simple, but now it's like all kinds of things you've got to think about. So yes, Trent probably wouldn't have worked in the 90s, but yeah, I would agree. Like, to be fair, he came around about the right time, to be honest. Like, yeah, like he came around about the right time. When kind of Klopp was trying something a bit different. And obviously, he was I think what we all forget, he used to be a midfielder, if I remember correctly. So.
Oh, we can tell.
Oh, that's just. Yeah. But yeah, like.
Can I just ask you, look, there are realistically two particular scenarios that look like it's going to happen with Trent. He's obviously out of contract very soon. I think this summer. Yes, this summer,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Option number one, he goes to Real Madrid, right? Which is clearly on the table. Option number two, he stays at Liverpool, signs a new contract, and they give him the captaincy. Which one do you think is more plausible?
I think he'll go.
Madrid. Yeah, he's going to Madrid, I think.
It's a weird one, because it's because obviously I've had this. You know, discussion before, we've got three players that are on the last years of their contract. So you've got Van Dijk, Mo Salah, and Trent. And every time you have a debate, you always think to yourself, you would love to keep all three. But the question you would ask yourself, if you could lose one, who would you think wouldn't be, like, it would hurt and it would be horrible, but we could adapt to it? You would say Trent, because Van Dijk is still one of the best defenders out there. And then we do have kind of cover, but a couple more years, he's still got a couple of good years in him and he could do well. And obviously Mo Salah, I mean, I don't even have to say much about that, I mean, to be honest. But like Trent's the only one, I would say.
No, I don't know. I'm going to say something controversially. I'd get rid of Urge if you're going to get rid of one of the three. And the reason I say that is, yes, Salah is Salah. Aging, admittedly, so if you want to get a last payday out in Saudi, Mo Salah, this is your chance. But obviously, Salah stays. Virgil van Dijk's brilliant, but how long is he going to be brilliant for, is what I'd say, with his age. And the other thing is, how often in today's day and age do a football club get somebody who's a diehard supporter, come through the academy, clearly a top, top talent, right? And he's only going to get better. And do you know what I mean? To me, Liverpool, let's look off the field, right? From a marketing point of view, from a shirt sales, from a club identity point of view, to me, making him the captain and the figurehead of this Liverpool team in the next 5 years is the call. Make him the new Gerrard. That's they need that Liverpool identity. And I think if you take Trent away, who have you got?
I agree with what you're saying, and I would love to see that sort of player happen for a club again, because you don't see it often these days. However, we're not talking, unfortunately, about a player who is a mid-table with a mid-table team who still has a chance to achieve loads with that team. He's done everything.
Yeah,
he's done it all. He's got the shirt. He has been one of the best right backs in the Premier League for a while. But there is, when Real Madrid come calling, it's Real Madrid.
No, I agree. From a player point of view, you're absolutely right. For Trent, it makes sense to go to Real Madrid. I'm just saying, from Liverpool's point of view, where you're saying the one to keep, I don't know why you wouldn't throw everything at Trent.
But I think, like Matthew says, I mean, when Real Madrid show interest, I don't even think it's the money. I mean, Liverpool could throw all the money in the world at him, but I think if there is a chance at all to go to Real Madrid and play for that team, as iconic a club as they are, I really don't think many players are able to kind of turn that opportunity down, money aside.
And the other thing, well, is that he, if it was say for example, he turned it down. If he turned it down, that might, he may not get that chance again. And say he signs a contract that's for 4, maybe 5 years at Liverpool, then I think, isn't he 26? So he'll be in his 30s by then. So, he might still have a chance later on. But his performance may have dropped so much that Real Madrid might go, I'm not interested.
No, I totally agree.
And who's to say as well that Liverpool, I mean, Liverpool are obviously top of the league right now, but I mean, with Real Madrid, you're always guaranteed to be thereabouts in the league title, you know, in the race for the league, La Liga. And you're always guaranteed, because it's Real Madrid, you're going to be in the latter stages of the Champions League as well. There's no guarantee that Liverpool will be doing either of those things under Arne Slot in the next couple of years. Again, obviously, they're doing great right now in the league, but there's no guarantee that that will continue on. I think that's part of the allure of Real Madrid as well, is that especially in Europe, they're always going to be thereabouts in terms of winning.
Being favourite. I mean, if Real Madrid came calling for me, sorry guys, I'm on my way.
I've noticed you suddenly hid your shirt from the camera a bit more. Is that Real Madrid now?
It's white though, isn't it? I'd like to think that your boyhood club being captain, winning trophies, would at least turn your head a bit. I'm not saying you'd agree, but for Liverpool, I think that's the best option. I'm not going to go anymore. It's fine. We're over the hour mark. We've been back. We've been back for an hour. And if we do this right, and Matt Thurney's edited it and hopefully had access to what was the old YouTube channel. So if you are on that, listening to this, well done you. Well done us. Make sure you subscribe, because I think we deserve it. And I think this might be a regular thing.
Quietly, I don't actually think I actually heard it.
Say that again.
See, we're all old now, no one hears a thing.
Age now.
Right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed it. I think we say bye now, right?
Brilliant. No, oh, take care, guys. I'll speak soon. See you soon, everyone.
All the best.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That